Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today, Bill Hooper. Bill, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Vic. Yes, I'm glad to be here.
Bill, you have been in the Yellow Springs area for a few years. You've been involved with Antioch College and Antioch University, and you and I have had a number of conversations over the time that I've known you. And just recently, you put together a little book of your personal reflections and thoughts and things that you've written over the years. And I'm wondering what it's called. I just read it the other day, but I can't remember the title, Bill.
I'm not sure. I remember it myself. It was inspired by my niece when her first child started going to college. She started writing a family magazine, was looking for material, so I've wrote stories for her. I really was writing them for her and for my children and I guess my grandchildren, if they're about things that happened in my life.
And this is something that you published yourself for your circle of family and friends. So if you're out there listening and you go to the bookstore and you say, I want the new Bill Hooper book, they're just going to look at you with a blank stare.
That's correct. No, it was just privately printed and just given to relatives and a few close friends.
Fortunately, I was able to peruse this tome, and I recognized some of the stories in it, and others were completely new to me. And one of them is a story about a trip you took on a ship when you were quite young.
Oh, 13. I was the youngest person. It was during the depth of the Depression, and some fellow came around to my mother, and I was running this sort of, you can't call it a camp, I guess, but it was on a boat out of Providence. It was a Canadian lumber schooner, three-master schooner, and she had no power at all, no refrigeration, and they used to bring lumber down from Canada in it. And they built some bunks in it for the kids, and there were, I guess, was about 12 or 14 of us. And I was the youngest, and we were towed out of Providence and sailed to Bermuda first. We headed for the Bahama Islands, but we got becalmed for a couple of weeks. And so they shortened the trip, and we came back to Charleston, South Carolina. But I rebelled a little on my own, and I got two guys to join me. And I decided we skipped ship, or we... anyway... It was the depth of the Depression. You could take a taxi anywhere in Charleston for 10 cents. So we took taxi around and so on. And then we went to a hotel and registered under false names. And I wasn't very imaginative. I think I was Clark Gable. And they actually did rent us a room. And we went, and we were sitting in the room, and the man that was running the didn't seem to have any trouble finding us. And he was very disappointed that I had, so to speak, run away, but not for very long. They called me a signalman or something, which is one of the few ranks they had, and he took that away from me. But he gave it back to me at the end of the trip, because I think he was sort of afraid of my mother. Anyway, it was a great experience.
This was in the early 30s.
Early 30s, in the middle of, well, I mean, when we were sailing, I was active. I was stationed. In other words, every time this boat tacked over, I ran up the main mast, the three masts, the forward, the main, and the mizzen, and some kid down below untied the topsail, and you passed it over a cable, and then you ran down and went back to bed. But it was fun, and more in retrospect at the time. The food, without any refrigeration, a highlight of the week would be they'd put some cheese on the salt beef or whatever it was. We didn't die, but it really wasn't very good food.
Bill Hooper joins us. And that is just one of the stories in this collection of stories and reflections that he wrote recently for private distribution. But we've taken that as a pretext to bring him onto the program because he's been a fan of the program for years. And in fact, the WYSO Studios, which moved to their current location in 1995, you had something to do with that, didn't you, Bill?
Well, actually, that time I was on the Antioch board. I was retired from the construction business, and I did a lot of work. It would have been a conflict if I was paid, but that didn't matter. I was having fine time, and I rebuilt those rooms down there. And actually, I did quite a few million dollars worth of work in the Antioch campus.
Our listeners are probably detecting just the slightest bit of accent. You've still got a little bit of an accent, and that goes back to, you're from Dedham?
Well, I'm from Dedham. It's a Boston accent. Both of my parents came from Boston, and my father's family went back to two generations before the Revolution. And the house in Marblehead called the King Hooper House, and my wife, Jean, when we were first married, asked Dad if he'd ever visited the King Hooper House. And Dad said, no, you know, we weren't very proud of him. He was on the other side. He was a Tory. But we're not descended from him. We're descended from his cousin from across the street, and he actually paid money to help the Revolution. They owned ships and things. That money didn't come down to me on this day and age, but they were quite well off.
Bill Hooper joins us, and I'm wondering, Bill, what brought you to Yellow Springs?
Well, the actual story, I didn't used to tell it. I was a product of boarding schools in New England, and my father and my uncles and my brother had all gone to Harvard, and I had a idea I didn't want to try to keep up with the distinguished group of people. And I personally was turned down by the director of admissions of Harvard. And he was so kind and nice about it, I thought he was complimenting me. But essentially he was saying he didn't think I'd ever grow up. And my mother suggested I look at Antioch. She was active in the arts. She was a painter, and she was connected to dance and so on, and she loaned me her car to come look at Antioch, and Antioch didn't ask me. Professor Inman was the admissions in those days, and she always made you feel you were very lucky to get in, but I don't think she was really wondering whether I was growing up or not. But that's how I got here.
I know that you're a longtime reader of the New Yorker magazine, and a number of years ago, I had the opportunity to interview a longtime writer for the New Yorker magazine, Brendan Gill, and when I introduced him, I went down my laundry list of all of his many accomplishments, and he was always the raconteur, and he said, well, he says, thank you. He says, it sounds like you've just read my obituary. I'm not going to go over your list of accomplishments, Bill, but I know you've done a lot of things. For instance, I know you've built a lot of houses. How many houses in Yellow Springs have you built?
Well, I did count it, and it was about, they weren't all in Yellow Springs, but mostly, and it was about 300. But house building, well, I found something that was more fun when I was was the amphitheater on the Antioch campus. Paul Treichler, who's he's a close friend. He was head of the theater department, and he showed me a picture of the theater in Epidaurus in Greece, a famous, very large amphitheater with perfect acoustics, and asked if I could build that. And we built it next to what they call the Antioch Golf Course, and built it with a circular masonry or half-circle masonry cyclorama wall. The acoustics in it were wonderful. It's still there today. It's still used today. It sat around 400 people. Some Antioch students, while I was building it, I guess in the Daily Pepper, the Record, the campus newspaper, wondered about what this contractor and this teacher were doing, this faculty member. I asked Trykler to find out who did the theater in Greece, and it turned out it was done by a man named Polykleitos the Younger. So I had a great big sign painted for the Antioch Amphitheater with the architect Polykleitos the Younger, and I put GIA for the Greek Institute of Architects on it.
Bill Hooper joins us, and I'm looking at the calendar, Bill, and looks like this is the month that you were born 91 years ago.
A week from now, I'll be 91. I was born in 1919 in Boston.
Yep. Well, congratulations, Bill.
Thank you.
To what do you attribute your longevity?
Well, I don't think it's to moderation. I don't think it's to immodesty. I really do enjoy life, and I've enjoyed it greatly these last few years, when you feel good. And I like food. I like drink. I wasn't a terribly good tennis player, but I played a lot of tennis and so on. But since I couldn't play anymore, I don't do any exercising. I am doing a lot of reading because I didn't used to have time to do it. And it took me about a year to being retired, because I did stay pretty active up to about 3 years ago. But now I enjoy life, and I have a very happy personal life.
So you waited until you were 88 to retire?
Oh, no. I actually got out of the contracting business back in the 70s and decided I always once wanted to do volunteer work. And so for a little while, I was associated with an architectural firm. When Antioch started coming back, and those were the new president, Al Guskin, we got some gifts so we could do some work of improving the campus, and I offered to do that, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And we built a graduate school in New England, and took an old furniture factory and converted it to the New England Graduate School, and a building in Seattle. But most of it was in Yellow Springs. And after I did that for, I really don't know how many years, 6 or 8 or 10 or 12, Al Guskin, before he retired, hired a man named Glenn Watts, who had an extensive background, and we worked together. And then on, they didn't need me up to that point. I don't know if they needed me when I was doing it, but we pretended they did.
Bill Hooper joins us. And in case you just tuned in, this is the Book Nook. And Bill did write a book. You won't find it in your local bookstore, but he's on the program today because he did write a book, and we have lots of other things to talk about as well. There's one story in the book that I had heard, and that's the story of your trip to California with your dog Thurber.
Oh, I love dogs, and now for the first time in my life, I don't have any, but I've had a series of labs. Thurber was the second dog I got, I think. Anyway, at the time, I really thought I was retired, and my wife was. My wife had founded Center Stage in Yellow Springs, and she also was closely associated with my son. Jean was an actress and a director. And so I decided to take a trip with my next best friend, his young dog. And he was about 6 or 8 months old, and I did it in the early spring. And it was a lot of fun, a young lab. They take a long time to grow up. Just fascinated by everything. I mean, I got a great picture, got out of the car at the Continental Divide where it was very windy and the dog's ears are flapping. I stayed with friends. Well, my daughter, I was inspired because my daughter was living in California at the time. And we just had she planned various things both for me and the dog. And on a Sunday, we took a brunch out to a park that, I can't remember his name. It had a polo field, and they played polo on
Will Rogers?
Will Rogers, yeah. Yeah, and we sat on the grass, and all kinds of people. They didn't charge rain to come in, but they charged the dog or something. I think they wanted $10. I don't know why. And all kinds of people come around to pat the dog. The dog was fascinated by the horses going back and forth. But on another time on that trip, he got lonely. Labradors tend to get lonely when they're young. And he consumed some of my daughter's underwear and a tube of cream, including the tube and so on. And so when we drove on up to Carmel on my way to visit my sister, he got very sick. And I called my vet, and they said to give him some Pepto-Bismol, but I never tried to give Pepto-Bismol to a dog. But I did take him down to the ocean with a good friend and kept throwing a stick into the ocean, and finally this dog got rid of all the remains of my daughter's underwear and all those other things and was perfectly happy from then on.
I remember Thurber. He was a very enthusiastic dog.
He was a little enthusiastic, but he was the dumbest dog I ever had. The three labs I had were very bright, but Thurber just had a lack of comprehension. And he'd look at you with sad eyes and say, yeah, I really meant to go out, but I don't know, I guess I forgot.
And you named him after a famous humorist from Columbus, Ohio, who wrote for The New Yorker, who did cartoons for The New Yorker.
Yeah, well, my daughter was going to name any dog, so I wouldn't mail until I had a white male. And actually, I read a lot about Thurber, and somebody said, why don't they, if you're going to name a dog after him, you have to name me Jamie or James. That's my name, not Thurber. But yes, I did name him after Thurber. When my children were young, really, you know, like 3 and 4 years old, or 2 or 3, I don't know. You read these stories like The Little Train That Could and all that, and you'd read them over and over, and it got terribly boring, and you started to think, trains don't talk or anything? So I got bored with it, and a friend of mine said, why don't you read Thurber stories? And I started reading the Thurber stories to my children. And there aren't any illustrations, but they're terribly, terribly funny stories. No matter how young you are, they're very contagious. Oh, I don't know. One had the fables of Thurber. There was the bear that could take it or leave it alone. And one day the bear would go down to the mead shop or something and buy mead for all the other bears and come home to his wife and turn handsprings and do various things, thereby greatly frightening his wife and his children. And according to Thurber, at least for the error of his ways, and he went around and preached upon the evil of drinking mead and so on, and he felt so good he'd come over still doing jumping around and showing how great he was, thereby still for frightening his wife and his children. And Thurber's comment at the end of the story, better to fall flat in your face than to lean too far over backwards. That was the line.
Bill Hooper joins us. You mentioned your late wife, Jean. Didn't she do a program on WISO at one time?
Oh, yeah. She was part of the early days of WISO. She was involved, and she read this program. I can't vaguely remember what she was reading and so on.
Was it something for children?
Oh, yes, it was. And Jean, besides, you know, WISO and Center Stage, the thing she was most enthusiastic about and involved hundreds of students in Yellow Springs in plays over the years that she ran that theater.
And I know your son, Jeff Hooper, has had involvement with WISO as well.
Yeah, I really don't know much what he had to do with it. But
I know he's been on the board.
Yes.
He was on the board.
He went to Antioch because when he was, not because we wanted him, kept trying to make sure, you know, get him to look further. But he went away to boarding school and came back, but he worked so much with the theater at Antioch, he wanted to do that. He graduated from Antioch in 72 or 3. Hmm. He went down and worked Appalachia, an apple shop, and then he came up here and started his own business. Today he's now he's doing farming, but he's also director of arts and learning for the Ohio Arts Council.
I've had conversations with your son. In fact, I've interviewed him on this program in the past, and I seem to remember one story about, didn't he spend one winter in a teepee out in your yard?
He and his first wife, she was very much interested in Indians, and he got interested in it, and they built a genuine teepee, got sailcloth when they were in a co-op job in Boston, and they really did live in there. They cooked in there. They entertained their friends. They slept there. The only thing they came into a house was, of course, right next door, so they did use our indoor plumbing, but they didn't, and they studied in our house, I think. But anyway, but I remember one night when it was about 14 above, and Jeffrey's first wife named Wendy and said, "Well, come on, Wendy," and she went out to the teepee. They were there through the winter. I was amazed. Wow. They always smelled like a freshly burned building because they had a fire in it and so on.
My guest today is Bill Hooper, and we're talking about a variety of different subjects. Bill, I understand that you have a rather ambitious trip planned this fall.
Oh, well, I have a very dear companion who has a lot of friends on the West Coast. It's Jane Baker. She lives here in town, and her husband, Bill Baker, died a number of years ago, and they used to share between Boulder, Colorado, and Yellow Springs every other year Thanksgiving, and they've been here, and I've met them, and that's where we're ending our trip there. Flying isn't any fun anymore, and I said, yeah, I'd love to go, but would you let's do it mostly by train. So we're going to go across Canada on the train. We got to fly to Toronto, and then three nights on the train, and you end up going through the Rockies. And then she has friends in Seattle and Santa Rosa, California, and go down the coast again by train. Amtrak, notoriously late because they have to give way for the freight trains. I'm going to visit to the Getty, then across to El Paso. She had two families in New Mexico, and there we go in a rented car back up to Colorado and fly to Yellow Springs right after Thanksgiving, back home after Thanksgiving.
Sounds like a fun trip, especially the train across Canada.
I suspect I won't be doing that again at my age.
You never know, Bill, because here you are. You're almost 91 years old, and you've got this great plan for this trip, and you never know, do you?
Well, it's always been the business of planning the trip. Well, I go into rather direct details, like you don't want to buy drinks one at a time on a train. It gets expensive, but you are in a nice Pullman car, so you tip the guy, and he'll bring you all the ice you want, and you can take some martinis with you when the proper time comes.
So you remember the glory days of riding on the train?
Oh, yes, I really do. And when I was, I don't know, let me see, 11 or 12, my mother had a theory. I was the youngest of four children. Her theory was send the kids out, get rid of them, and they'll always come back. We all went to boarding schools and camps and everything. And I spent a year when I was 11 or 12, not old enough to go to boarding school, in Carmel, California. There were a couple of nice ladies at the time, because they're old ladies. I think they were probably in their 40s or 50s, who came from Milton, Mass., and they took about a dozen kids out there on the train. And I spent the whole winter there, and we had horses and stuff like that. It didn't further one thing for me. They saw I was partially left-handed, so they made me write left-handed all year, and thank heavens I ended up learning how to type, because nobody could possibly read my handwriting now.
You're saying that you kept writing left-handed after that?
No. Oh. The minute I got away from those two nice ladies, I went back to writing right-handed.
Okay.
One of the stories I didn't write, but I frequently tell, was my mother was very direct person, and at the dining room table, I'm told this, I obviously don't remember it, 8 or 9 or 7 or 8 or 6, trying to cut a piece of meat, and she looked across the dining room table and saw I was having trouble and said, "That's all right, dear, why don't you just put your foot on it and growl?"
I understand you just wrote another story here just the other day.
Well, yeah. It's the first one I've written in years. There's an incident in town. A friend, a 96-year-old man friend, passed away, and his daughter and husband came down, and he's a cellist. And the week after the friend died on a Saturday, the following Saturday, he was scheduled to play in a wedding, and he'd left Chicago in dungarees. So my friend took him over to the Goodwill and found some pants and coat. And there she found this tuxedo jacket, which didn't fit him. So she was sure it would fit me. And we went back a couple of days later, and except for lengthening the sleeves, and she gave it to me. I mean, just a real spendthrift. It cost $1.49 plus tax. And then I was faced with I didn't have any pants. And she said, well, you wear dark pants. And no, if you come from Boston, if you're going to wear a tuxedo jacket, you're going to wear the right pants. So I went over to Price Brothers in Dayton, and they looked at this jacket. And actually, it had never been worn. The side pockets were still sewn. It had never been, not held with a stitch. And said they hadn't had any of that quality in 15 years. He said, I don't know about matching it. Secondhand pants would be $40 or... Let me see what I can find. And he disappeared and was gone for the longest time. Price Brothers sells a lot of, wedding clothes and formal clothes. That's a specialty. Came back with a pair of pants. I don't think they'd been worn. If they had been, they'd been worn by somebody who had to be 6'8". There was about almost 9 inches too much long for me, but they fit perfectly. And I asked him how much he wanted, and he said $10. So I've had it molded. Now I have a nice tuxedo and got to figure out some way to some reason to wear it for under $12.
You can wear it on the dining car, on the train across Canada.
I suggested to my friend that we get dressed on Friday nights for dinner, but she turned me down. I wasn't being serious.
Mm. Well, Bill, as always, when we have a conversation, the time just flies, and I really appreciate you taking some time to spend with us today.
Vic, thanks very much. You're a good friend, and thanks for asking me.
Our guest today in the Book Nook has been Bill Hooper. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Thanks for listening. Bill Hooper's book is called Tall Tales and Short Ones. Tune in next week for the Book Nook when my guest will be Marlon James. His novel, The Book of Night Women, was just awarded the Dayton Literary Peace Prize for Fiction. Marlon James will be in town to collect his award in November, and we'll be talking to him about it right here in the Book Nook. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.